Good morning and welcome to Back Chat. I'm Sarah Passmore.
And I'm Hugh Chivett. And today we're asking if the time is right to open a casino in Hong Kong.
Singapore has announced a $3 billion plan to open casinos, ending a 40-year ban.
With Thailand, Taiwan, Japan, even India also considering similar developments, Singapore wants to get ahead of the game.
The Hong Kong government says it has no plans to develop casinos, but pressure is growing even within the Executive Council.
Opponents say there's a social and a moral cost, but others claim that casinos can be kept clean and under control.
So what are the pros and cons of having casinos?
And just how can they be run best for the benefit of everyone?
We'd like to know what you think, so do call us on 233 88266, that's 233 88266, or you can email backchat at rthk.org.hk.
And joining us for the discussion this Friday morning on Backchat, we have Legislative Councillor Howard Young, who represents the Tourism Functional Constituency, David Webb, who's the editor of website.com, Bill Edington, who's a professor of economics and director of the Institute for the Study of Gambling and Commercial Gaming at the University of Nevada in Reno, joining us on the line from there, and also on the line from Singapore, Christopher Koo, who's the managing director of Master Consult Services Limited. And perhaps we can start with you, Mr. Koo. Good morning. Mr. Koo?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people thought Singapore would be the last place in the world to open a casino. Why is the government thinking seriously about doing so now?
Well, we've resisted the call for about 40 years to have a casino in Singapore. But this time around, the proposals that were put forward for the concepts for the integrated resort, which includes a gaming element, was just recently approved by the Cabinet and presented to the Parliament. I believe today they would formally accept it. The main reasons were mainly economic, that it was not possible for Singapore to remain stagnant and close itself off to casino gambling, or at least to what's happening around the world. And the integrated resort had a very strong economic pull to that.
The integrated resort is this rule, basically, within the clause that says 50% of any revenue will have to come from a resort, from something other than gambling.
That's right. I believe one of the conditions for the integrated resort was that the gaming component should not exceed 50% of overall revenues.
So is that going to make it difficult for people who are interested?
Well, I believe that having received 19 different proposals or concepts, those people who submitted those concepts evidently thought that it was doable.
Why was the Singapore government so concerned that there should be this clause?
I believe they didn't want the integrated resort to be predominantly gambling-led or casino-led. And this was one of the measures that was put in place to say that from a revenue point of view, no more than 50% of the revenue should be casino or gambling-related. In fact, from what we've read in the papers, in terms of area, the casino element or the gaming element would comprise anywhere from 3 to 5% of the total proposed development.
I mean, is there much controversy in Singapore about this? How do
there
people feel about it?
There was a huge year-long debate. In fact, if I remember correctly, we've never had the country so animated in stating its case both for and against, in fact primarily against, the for constituency was conspicuously silent, even though many knew that it was the economic reasons that was supporting the pro-integrated resort camp. Against, there was a lot of resistance from the religious groups as well as from many of the grassroots and social groups that came out very strongly against the proposal. Many of them, because the discussion centered around casino gambling, I believe felt that it was likely, well, they thought that it was going to be a predominantly gambling den, if for want of a better word. And that put many people off to say that, you know, we don't need to introduce gambling into Singapore on such a large scale.
All right, let's bring in now Bill Edington, who's Professor of Economics and the Director of the Institute for the Study of Gambling and Commercial Gaming at Reno, the University of Nevada there. Professor Edington, hello to you.
Good morning.
I guess good morning, yeah. Okay, are you surprised about Singapore's move?
Not really. I think it's a very interesting experiment that is consistent with other developments that are going on, certainly in the Far East at the present time. A number of Asian countries have looked at the casino issue much more seriously, especially in light of the economic success in Macau in the last few years.
Who would Singapore be appealing to? Who would be betting in the casinos there?
Well, virtually every major gaming company in the world is going to bid on this just because it's such a valuable license to be had. And one of the real challenges in Singapore is, are they going to be able to control the unintended negative social consequences associated with gambling? And they certainly have put forward a model that looks like it's going to have a very high emphasis on those controls. And so they're going to, they're probably going to find companies who are very anxious to win the bid and who are going to be willing to put forward very aggressive social cost minimizing and mitigating strategies.
What are the social costs?
Well, the big issue around gambling throughout the world is problem gambling, people who spend too much money on gambling. And if you look at, if you look at Hong Kong or Singapore right now, you have a much higher per capita expenditure on gambling, even though you do not have casinos in either venue, than you do, for example, in the United States or many other parts of the world. Asians and Chinese in particular are very avid, enthusiastic gamblers. And there is a concern that with too many individuals and too many households, that gambling is going to come back and create significant social problems.
Can you really create casinos that are less likely to cause problem gambling than others? I mean, gambling is gambling, whatever guise you put it in.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, the studies that have been done suggest that the, you know, the proportion of problem gambling or pathological gambling in a, certainly in a Western society, is approximately 1% of the adult population. And it's a matter, really, of controlling that 1% and maybe the additional 5% who are at risk. And given a single or even two casinos within Singapore, and given a very aggressive government position that says to the licensees that this is an issue that we are very concerned with, I would expect to see some very aggressive controls to try to basically moderate gambling behavior, at least within the context of the casino.
Howard Young, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, what do you think are the pros and cons of opening casinos in Hong Kong?
Well, speaking from the tourism industry, which I represent, I think this is an issue that should be addressed and a decision to be made, and from my point of view, hopefully favorably, by the Hong Kong government as soon as possible. You asked just earlier on whether the other speaker was surprised at Singapore. I myself, on the one hand, I'm not surprised that they have ultimately come to this conclusion. What I am surprised is that where Hong Kong is usually seen as a fast mover, dynamic city, that Singapore, in this respect, have actually moved faster than us.
The thing is, of course, we've got Macau over the other side of the delta. The understanding is that this is Macau's game and we're not allowed to poach on it. Is that the reality?
Yes, I totally support Macau in its efforts to build itself up as the Las Vegas of the Far East. I don't think anybody here in the tourism industry thinks that we want to compete head-on with them in this respect. But what we are asking for is something to enhance or complement our already magnificent tourism products. That is why when members of the industry, in fact, although the publicity in this matter has raised up recently because the Liberal Party openly raised it when they saw the chief executive last autumn and asked him to put this into his policy speech. In fact, I recall more than two and a half years ago, the members of the tourism industry in a closed-door meeting did already put it to the chief executive then. We want a facility to be allowed mainly or perhaps exclusively to cater for tourists. and we're looking at the meetings and conventions markets. I mean, Las Vegas, people say that is a gaming city, a gambling city, but I see it more as a convention city.
But how would we
and,
not...
And I think that would do Hong Kong's tourism product good.
But how would we not compete directly with Macao?
Well, we'll talk about limited number of casinos in resort areas. And we're now talking about building up Lantau, where the logistics park should be in this area, and whether resorts or spas should be another area. And we are aiming for having casinos to be allowed on resort-type facilities on Lantau.
Oh, well, I thought you said they were going to be with conventions. I thought you said they were going to be associated with conventions.
I mean, people do go to resort areas to hold conventions. You have hotels with leisure facilities, with casino, with large meeting rooms and conference rooms in resort areas.
Is this a decision just for Hong Kong to make, or would Beijing have to give its approval?
Well, I'm sure Beijing might say anything, but I think it is something totally within the autonomy of Hong Kong. And when we in the Liberal Party made our suggestions, or when people in the tourism industry started talking about it, I don't believe any of us thought it was essential to get Beijing's approval before speaking out on a topic.
David Webb, I mean, it looks almost too good to be true, doesn't it? You open a casino and you get billions of dollars in your coffers. That seems to be what happens in Macau. You don't have to do very much. You sit back and get rich. You can even give the civil servants a pay rise if you want. That's what they're doing. Is it as simple as that?
I think it's not really a question of trying to get rich out of it as to give people civil liberties. They're able to place bets on horses, but only with a monopoly. They're able to place bets on the lottery, again, only with the same monopoly. They're able to take risks in the stock market. They can buy Macau concept stocks, or they can buy covered warrants, or they can buy futures. I don't see why they shouldn't be allowed to make bets in a casino on games of chance, or to make bets with licensed bookmakers, or to make bets with each other through betting exchanges. I think that's the priority. I don't agree with the idea that there should be an artificially constrained number of casinos. For example, Macau only handed out 3 franchises, and as a consequence, just the franchise itself, without any assets invested, is now worth $18 billion in Galaxy Casino's case. Singapore is also taking a centrally planned approach by saying there should only be 2, and they should be in one particular place. I think that the more correct approach, if you believe in free markets, would be to set up a gaming commission to make sure that people who run casinos or bookmakers are not criminals and have proper capitalization and play fair and honor their bets. They don't stack the decks, if you like. But then anyone who qualifies should be allowed to open up and let competition reign.
We had this discussion before in the autumn. I mean, we were talking about casinos on every street corner. Is that? I mean, would that you would have no problem with that?
Casinos
all over the place.
I don't think that would be commercially viable. I think the casinos would find that they couldn't attract people if they were just corner shops, and there would only be a market for so many of them. But there's a market in stockbroking, for example. We don't say there can only be 10 stockbrokers or there can only be 5. We say if you qualify to operate a stockbroker and you have the right capital and professional qualifications, you can do it. Whether the market then ends up with a stockbroker in every corner or ends up with about 300 as we have at present, the market should determine.
Okay, it's 11 minutes to 9. We're talking this morning about whether or not we should open a casino in Hong Kong, or several casinos in Hong Kong. We'd like to know what you think. 233-88266, that's the number to call, or you can email backchat@rthk.org.hk. Paul has just called to say Hong Kong already has its own casinos. The Mahjong parlours are the casinos of the East. We can bet on horses, football, etc. So why not have a casino as well? In fact, if we build it right next to Disneyland, we can promote Lantau as the entertainment island of Hong Kong. That comes from Paul. If you have any ideas that you'd like to share with us, we'd like to hear them.
Christopher Koo, who would be using the casinos in Singapore? Who's the target market?
The target market, according to the concepts that have been submitted, would be primarily overseas visitors. Of course, there would be a local component. And from what we have heard from reports, that this local component would be substantially below 50%, anywhere from 30 to 50%. But the main markets would be the overseas tourists. Now, these the markets that were mentioned were from China and India, as well as our regional markets, our neighbors in Malaysia and Indonesia, Thailand, Philippines. In fact, because of the growing Asian middle class, the concept submitters have mentioned that the Asians, not the limited Singapore market, are their primary markets.
And I think there's a plan to actually penalize local residents.
They've put in a number of safeguards to ensure, or at least to make it difficult for Singaporeans to enter into the casino or the casino area. There's a daily charge. It's $200 Singapore, $100 Singapore, or $2,000 annual fee for entering the casino or playing using its facilities. This does not apply to overseas guests and tourists. There are other restrictions about credit, extension of credit also, and these are meant as safeguards to prevent, to discourage the very use of the facilities by Singaporeans.
Mm. 100 Singapore, what's that in US dollars?
That's about $60.
About 60 US dollars. Howard Young, what about that as a suggestion? Hong Kong residents in Hong Kong having to pay... $500 or something?
Oh, when we made the proposal, we did say that we wanted the emphasis to be on attracting tourists. And that's why we proposed a casino and resort for tourists only. But at that time, we had in mind, well, the simple way would be to control it by, if you've got a non-Hong Kong passport, then you can go in. We did not come up with the proposal on having what is sort of a surcharge for locals. I think that this is a unique idea, but other places around the world, I mean, way back, even before the disintegration of Eastern Europe, way back in the 80s, I know there were casinos in places even in Hungary, and at that time it was very openly said in tourist books that this is open for tourists only, you must bring your passport.
What's the point behind that? So that the social problem goes away on the next plane, you don't have to deal with it in Hong Kong?
Well, I think we have to be realistic. We do recognize that there is considerable concern amongst mainly religious groups, social welfare groups, and some education groups who are pretty vocal in Hong Kong against the idea of having casinos.
Do they only care about Hong Kong people? They don't care about the tourists?
Well, they mainly care about Hong Kong people. So we thought that if we were to openly call for, just open up for casinos, it would stand a slim chance of getting through the Hong Kong community. So that is why we thought, well, let's put our emphasis on tourists. And you can see right away that the vocal opposition to this has been much less when we had the legislation on opening up football pools in Hong Kong a few years ago, because we have emphasized that this is mainly for tourists and very and limited.
So would you, once you've got the casino, would you then try and expand it to local people as well?
We would not. Well, we in the Liberal Party and the tourism would not take that initiative.
I've got to say, I think that's that the whole proposal that you should screen out locals is insulting to their intelligence. You know, it's like, you know, locals are too stupid to understand the risks, but foreigners can and they should be allowed to gamble. I think that's wholly wrong. If you're going to allow gambling... Allow it to any adult that you know, that wants to gamble, and if they don't come into the casinos, they'll go elsewhere. They'll go to the jockey club instead.
Is that Bill Edington?
Yes, it is. One of the observations that can be made about urban casinos anywhere in the world is that even though governments would prefer to have tourists as their primary customer, the experience is largely that the locals will dominate the play just by sheer numbers, and even with a $100 Singapore dollar entrance fee. That is not too different than the cost of a Hong Kong citizen traveling to Macau and back. You're going to have a very large proportion of Singaporeans frequenting the Singapore casinos, and if there were casinos in Hong Kong, whatever your policy, you're very likely to have Hong Kong citizens as the dominant customers in those casinos, and that's part of the reality check that policymakers should evaluate.
I'm not too sure of that. If you look at, well, it probably depends also on how you draw the line, what is local and what is not local. But Hong Kong is only a city. Macau is a city. I'm sure that the people who go to casinos in Macau are by far people who are not resident in Macau. They're Chinese tourists from across the border. Now, looking at Hong Kong, I think our main market would be Asian and Chinese tourists from across the border. Even if you take Las Vegas, right, I agree that the great majority of people who go to Las Vegas casinos are, I would guess, by far Americans, but I would also venture to say that by far they are not residents of Las Vegas. They are from outside.
Okay,
and
so
probably
Las
from
Vegas
distances.
Is the one major
exception in the world, really. And you know, there are very few places that have true destination resort casinos, and especially when they're in urban areas. If you look at Chicago or you look at any of the other American cities that have casinos close in,
I think
they're almost exclusively for locals to the extent that tourists have trouble finding a seat at the table.
Well, I think the Walker Hill in Seoul is also a very well-known facility that caters mainly for tourists.
Yeah, but they have a law in
Genting,
Korea that prohibits
and also Genting in Malaysia.
They have a law in Korea that prohibits locals, and in Malaysia, Muslims are largely prohibited by both law and religion. So, I mean, the point is that if you have an urban casino or urban casinos, they're going to be very attractive to people who have easy access to them. And when you have a population of 7 million or so, as Hong Kong does, you're going to have an awful lot of casinos before you get excess capacity to accommodate tourists.
Maybe I can just put in a word here about Singapore. The figures that were bandied about by the government was that Singaporeans already spent in the region of $4 billion gambling within Singapore, and those are through the legal soccer bets, four digits, horse racing, forms of gambling, and another two billion Singapore dollars overseas in overseas casinos. That means leakages to Genting, to Batam, and Australian and European and American casinos. This is already the scale of gambling that is present in Singapore, and that's just the legal gambling that people can estimate, the authorities have estimated. And one of the arguments is that, firstly, we'd be able to stem the leakage, and secondly, it's just an extension to the gambling that was already prevalent in the country. There was a very hard-headed admission that you cannot completely prohibit gambling. It's in the Chinese nature to gamble, to bet on anything that moves. But to be able to channel that into the integrated resort, the whole discussion, rightly or wrongly, focused on the casino, but the benefits actually accrue from the integrated resort as a whole, where the casino is a much smaller element only.
Okay, we've got some interesting emails coming in we'd like to deal with after the news at 9 o'clock. But Howard Young, I mean, has this actually worked in Macau? Because they had sort of, agreements on developing resorts and things like this in Macau. But in effect, doesn't it just come down to the casinos, basically?
It's too early to say whether it's working in Macau, because they're talking about building a different class of casinos from what they traditionally have. But I'm sure it will certainly raise Macau's status as a convention and meeting center. And it will also help their hotel industry there. If it were all locals, then it wouldn't have any impact on the hotels. But I'm sure that Macau will see great strides made in the convention meetings and hotel business once they get these casinos rolling.
Mm. All right, well, we're talking this morning about casinos and the possible development in Hong Kong. What do you think? Give us a call, 233-88266, backchat@rthk.org.hk. And as I say, we've got some interesting emails we'll get to after the news. We've got a break for 5 minutes. The weather, mainly fine with coastal fog today. Maximum temperature, 28 degrees. Outlook mainly fine over the next couple of days and some showers around early next week. The latest readings, we have 23 degrees Celsius with a relative humidity now of 90%. Back in five.
You're listening to Backchat on Radio 3. Call us on 233-88266 or email backchat@rthk.org.hk. It's your voice.
Welcome back to Backchat with me, Sarah Passmore and Hugh Chiverton. This morning we're asking if it's the right time for opening a casino in Hong Kong, and we'd like to know what you think. We're joined by Howard Young, Legislative Councillor responsible for the tourism functional constituency, David Webb, the editor of website.com, Bill Edington, Professor of Economics and Director for the Institute for the Study of Gambling and Commercial Gaming at the University of Nevada in Reno. And in Singapore, Christopher Koo, Managing Director of Master Consult Services. But we would like to hear from you too. As I said, we've heard from Mrs. Lee. She's given us a call. She says she's more concerned about outrageous hotel prices when it comes to attracting tourists to Hong Kong. But she said gambling already exists in Hong Kong and it is legal to a certain extent, so why not allow casinos? And why only restrict it to tourists? There are simply no convincing arguments to discourage Hong Kong people from going to casinos. That comes from Mrs. Lee.
David, in an email, is also concerned about excluding local people. He says, gambling for tourists? You've got to be joking. Why should Hong Kong people be disenfranchised from using a casino at the expense of tourists? What is a passport? A Hong Kong ID card is a form of passport, since I have to produce it for the immigration people and I wish to enter Hong Kong. This whole area is wide open for abuse. A lot of nonsense is being talked this morning about trying to segregate what class a person can enter a casino. It'll never work. Why do we need to imitate Singapore? Says David. George says, let the mainlanders and the loan sharks be segregated in Macau. We don't need any more of them in Hong Kong. Barely 0.1% of the profits from Macau casinos end up in the hands of the Macau people. You only have to see the indigent old ladies with their begging bowls in Coloane. Tell these casino moguls and their stooges in your studio to get a proper job, like teaching or nursing. Les jeux sont faits, rien ne va plus, says George. Howard Young. Good morning.
Morning.
Morning, yes. I think when we were talking about stooges, maybe that was addressed to you, possibly. George was saying there that basically the people of Macau get no benefit from the casinos. And, how would we ensure that we would if we opened them in Hong Kong?
I'm very confident that if you ask an ordinary man in the street of Macau, they would definitely say they benefit from that industry, which is a major part of their economy. Now, as for whether it benefits the community or not, I know there is an academic in Hong Kong, Polytechnic, from the School of Tourism, that has done a study on pros and cons of casinos and it came to the conclusion that the greatest benefit to a community are not casinos per se, but what type of casinos and what type of management. And I listened to a luncheon talk given by her, and the conclusion was that if you have casinos on every street corner catering for the locals, then she reckoned that the local benefits would probably not outweigh many of the disadvantages, the problem of problem gamblers and so on. But if you develop casinos that were mainly in resort areas to cater for tourists, that would produce the greatest net benefit to the community which has them.
Mm. Right, that was Kathy Shu, I think, who we did invite on the program, is unable to,
she,
to join us.
That was the person I listened to talk to, and I think perhaps if there is an opportunity, if we can produce a much wider audience to listen to very rational arguments, that would be fine.
Okay.
I think the caller, or the listener rather, is wrong about the Macau tax situation. The budget surplus in Macau will be huge because of the revenues from gambling. Whether they spend that on the poor people in Coloane is a matter for that government. And the listener may be right that they don't spend enough on the social safety net, on education or healthcare. That's obviously a different question. But I think it's fairly certain that overall the economy will generate higher tax revenues if people are free to do what they want in business, and that includes running casinos.
I think what George was perhaps also stumbling towards was the point that casinos are a dirty business. You get the loan sharks, you've got all this money basically sloshing around which can't be accounted for. It's the perfect place for money laundering, for extortion, you get people who are desperate, so you get loan sharks. Crime feeds on gambling naturally. You can't have one without the other.
I think we have a lot of loan sharks in Hong Kong already, but there are ways to mitigate that risk. For example, if you impose limits on the amount of cash that can be brought into casinos and require people to either transfer money from bank accounts, which creates a paper trail, or to use credit cards, which also creates a paper trail, then you reduce the risk of, for example, drug runners running their profits through casinos corrupt officials from the mainland with suitcases full of cash. So there are ways to mitigate that, but It is important to allow legal lending so that you don't drive the lending underground into the hands of triads and loan sharks.
All right, we've got Lucky on the line. Good morning.
Good morning to all. Please take note that gambling is sure evil because it's part of greed. And it spreads evil, spreading is evil really fast because catching whole Asia like fire. Everybody wants to now open a casino because Singapore just said that we want to open a casino. You see, it is ridiculous. And I will tell you how it is evil. The greed creates anxiety in heart, and anxiety causes that balance is lost. Balance when lost means instability got. Likewise, instability in family got. And if family instability got, means society gets instability to all.
So you wouldn't want any casinos?
Why? We have enough money. And if somebody is going to jump in the river, we do not have to go and jump in the river.
We've got enough money, did you say, Lucky?
Of course. There's sufficient money, you know, except if civil servants are going to be paid much more than what our treasury has. That means we have the problem, and that is also the greed.
I'm not allowed sure you're allowed to say that in Hong Kong, actually. David Webb, have we got enough money?
I don't think that's really the point. I'm amused that the caller's name is Lucky, did you say? But the caller has a point of view. He's entitled to respect for that, and he doesn't have to go to casinos if we open them in Hong Kong. I think, though, that there should be opportunity for those who wish to take risks financially in the spot markets or by betting on games of chance to do so. There are social aspects to all this. There are social aspects, for example, to drinking alcohol. It tends to have, as a consequence, a small proportion of drinkers who can't handle it become alcoholics and need support groups and healthcare. But we don't ban people from drinking alcohol, nor do we say that only foreigners can drink alcohol if they have a passport, nor do we say that there should only be a certain number of pubs. Anyone who qualifies for a liquor license can open a pub and sell alcohol. So, you know, I think that there ought to be consumer choice in this, and those who believe that it's for religious reasons or other reasons that it is wrong to gamble don't have to.
Lucky, we already have gambling of sorts in Hong Kong.
It is not really good. Job of the government is to stop evil all. Instead, government's in promoting wrong. Why?
Is it to let people have the choice?
It's not the question of choice. If you give the wrong choice, the people people love to, you know, chase the wrong choice. Why not next time also make the prostitution legal?
Mm. Well, prostitution is rife in Hong Kong as well.
Legal. Yes, but you know, Mr. Webb gave, you know, in spite I respect Mr. Webb very much, you know, I like to say that the pubs are there because drinking evil has been also increased, and it also breaks the families. So the social cost is much more than visible to anybody.
You want a nanny state, then?
Yes.
You would
I do not say, you know, but if the government encourages, because, you know, United States has encouraged it, you know, that means we are in the immoral state gradually, even if it's not visible.
Okay.
If anything wrong, you know, you adopt as okay, means the morals has degraded right there.
But is it the government's role to make us moral people or impose their morals on us?
The government means leadership. The leadership job is to ensure the people have certain amount of morality in their head, you know. But if you keep on giving the devices which encourage the immorality, means the people will become immoral and then the whole society will suffer. The purpose of life is not only to make money or have this anxiety in the life, but also to have stability in the families. The families will have no stability because everybody is anxious, you know, to make more money.
Okay, Lucky,
thanks very much. Howard Young, I know you have to go in a moment.
Yeah, okay. I'm all for talking about moral standards and raising them, but I must also point out that moral standards also and the norm changed with time. I understand that in the century before last, in the Victorian age, it was almost a sin for a lady to wear skirts that were higher than ankle level, let alone knee levels. But times are changing, so people's standards will also change.
Before you go, I just wanted to ask you this question about tax rates, because the proposed developments in Singapore are talking about a tax rate of what is it, about 15%. And there's a, at the moment in Macau, there's a 39% tax rate. So there's a lot of flexibility for, you know, for setting your tax rate. We could compete very strongly and directly with Macau if we had a lower tax rate. Where would you set the tax rate?
I must admit we haven't crossed this hurdle yet and haven't
should,
given much
thought
to it.
Should we be lower than Macau? Should we be trying harder than Macau to attract people?
I think what income you get from it, from when we made the proposal, was a secondary thought in our minds. If the first thing was to provide something that would complement the tourism product for tourists who come to Hong Kong. And the second thought was to provide a facility that would actually create employment and jobs in Hong Kong, especially for lower skilled, less educated workers. We did not do much study on the actual tax income, although I understand from Cathy Xu's study, she did point out to considerable benefits to a government and community in taxes.
But just in terms of competing with Macau, should we be lower or higher?
I haven't thoroughly thought about this. My first priority is to get the thing into existence first.
Right. Yeah, I think
our starting point is not to compete with Macau. The starting point is to create a more all-round tourism product to complement Hong Kong already splendid product.
But the lower we set our tax rate, the more successful we'll be in that, won't we?
Well, as I said, I haven't researched the figures in this. I wouldn't want to jump to a conclusion right away on this one.
We have a rate of profits tax in Hong Kong. It currently is 17.5%, I believe, and it applies to all businesses in Hong Kong. I don't see why casinos should be subject to a differential rate of tax on their profits, because if you do that, what you do is create distortions in the economy in terms of the allocation of capital, and you also end up with the casinos trying to shift profits out into non-casino limited companies, for example, paying management fees to a related party, so that that company can be taxed at the normal profits tax rate while the casino company is taxed at a different rate. So for that reason, I think you should have the same level of profits tax for all businesses, whether they're in selling alcohol, running pubs, running casinos, or whatever.
Well, if we had 17.5%, we'd bankrupt Macau,
well,
wouldn't we?
Not necessarily, no.
I'd like to make a couple of points here, because the casino industry is one that is treated differently than other industries almost everywhere in the world. And, you know, it is very common to have a percentage tax on gross gaming revenues, and that tax rate can vary from 7% in Nevada to 90% in Germany. So it's all over the board, and Macau at 40% is a fairly moderate tax rate. So you've got a lot of flexibility there.
I would rather address it.
I think it's important to look at what has recently occurred in the United Kingdom to test this idea that casinos should be treated in a competitive environment. The British started with their Gambling Reform Act in 1999 with this as the underlying philosophy. Last month, the Parliament decided that they were not going to go forward, and they've authorized only a single casino, a so-called super casino, to be built in the UK under the new law. This was a result, I think, of a lot of introspection on the part of Parliament and the media as to whether it was a good idea to have a massive proliferation of casinos in the country.
I mean,
I suspect the same thing would happen if the debate came up in Hong Kong.
You do need to pay for the social costs of this. For example, we tax tobacco because of the healthcare costs it creates, and we do the same with alcohol. And there is a case, I think, for putting a levy on the gross turnover. When you buy casino chips, for example, you pay a percentage levy on that to pay for these costs. But I do think that the actual business itself, the profits of the business, should be taxed at the same rate as any other business.
All right, our number is 233-88-266. So we've got Harry, I think, on the line now. Harry, good morning. Hello, Harry. Hurry up. Harry, hello? Hello?
Harry's not there. We've got to say goodbye to Howard Young. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
We've had a call from Mary. She says she hasn't heard yet from the panel about what the central government thinks. Surely Macau relies on gambling for its revenue, and here in Hong Kong we have alternatives. We don't necessarily need a casino to generate revenue. And she doesn't think the central government would be happy with Hong Kong muscling in on Macau's economy. That comes from Mary.
Bill Edington, reading about Macau, one The thing that struck me about the gaming industry there is this figure that I think 72% of the income, the gambling income, comes from not the sort of the general tables and the slot machines and things like that, but the VIP rooms. Is that unusual, and does that mean that we'd have to have a special kind of casino in Hong Kong?
Well, it is very unusual in a global context. In Las Vegas, about 7 or 8% of the revenues come out of the so-called premium play, which is the baccarat play. The VIP rooms pose a lot of problems for the American operators who will be coming into Macau in the next few years, primarily because of issues of money laundering, loan sharking, and other practices that would be unacceptable to Western regulators. And I think this is one of the challenges in Macau to adjust their regulatory structure so that they are going to be in line with international standards.
So you're saying
my suspicion is gaming in Hong Kong would have much the same question that it would have to pose.
That's interesting. So you're saying about 7% of the income in Vegas comes from the high rollers, from the private rooms, and it's 70% in Macau, 10 times as much.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. David Webb, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's important to have a strong regulator to make sure that if you do license gambling establishments, that they comply with the terms of that license and don't have back rooms which are conducting business in an unorthodox way. So again, and coming back to the point on money laundering, again, as I said earlier, if you create a paper trail, if you restrict the amount of cash betting, if you make sure that there are legal ways to borrow money, then you don't have such a big problem with the underground.
And Christopher Koo,
yes.
Also reading about what's happening in Singapore, there were some sort of suggestions that they wouldn't advertise it too much. They wouldn't make it too attractive. How far has that gone? There were suggestions that they'd limit neon signs, for example. They wouldn't have jackpot machines all over the place.
Well, it's not going to be a garish Las Vegas-style casino, at least exterior, from an exterior point of view. If I remember the terms of the tender, when they called for the concepts, they said that there should be no advertising within Singapore. Naturally, advertising, promoting the casino itself outside of Singapore would be okay. This is all part of the measures that were supposed to protect the Singapore population. The Singapore population would know about the casino itself or the other elements of the integrated resort. And it's actually the other elements of the integrated resort that have actually won over the majority of the cabinet as well as the parliament right now. We're talking about 35,000 new jobs from these two integrated resorts that are going to be built. And this was actually, the economic factors were the ones that actually swung the whole argument in favor of the integrated resorts.
Mm.
Okay, 233-88266. We've got Brian on the line. Good morning.
Good morning.
What did you want to say?
Well, my concern is about public safety, basically. I have visited Las Vegas, Atlantic City, and all the big casino joints, and it seems fairly safe. But with all the things that have been happening lately, like, after the Sevens, the Westerner getting attacked and things like that, will this create more of a problem for the police than they can handle?
That was just one-off incident there, wasn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I think that might be, but to be fair, my wife came home last week and found a man in our apartment, going through our drawers. So this is happening more and more, and the police told us that it is happening more and more. The triad, whatever they call it, is becoming more and more prominent in Hong Kong. And that is my concern. Will this, hurt the police's ability to handle what happens?
Yeah, Christopher Koo, people yep. talked about that, about, a crime associated with casinos on the periphery.
Well, right now we're about 5 years away before the first dice will be rolled, but we're already talking about state-of-the-art measures in terms of preventing things like money laundering, triads, gangsterism, already talking about putting measures in place to deal with the expected rise in problem gamblers, pathological gamblers. I'd like to see it happen eventually when the casinos are up and running. But right now we're talking about all the kind of measures that can be put in place, that can conceivably be put in place to prevent or to nip the problems at the bud.
Brian seems to be talking about basic sort of burglary and robbery and theft from gamblers who are trying to fund their habit. I mean, is that the kind of problem you've talked about as well?
I think there would be naturally an increase in crime, or people who would be have to turn to crime if they to feed their gambling habits. And education is already, I think the minister has already announced a $1 million education campaign directed at the young in terms of teaching them about what happens during gambling and what are the ills of this gambling.
Brian, what do you think? Do you think we should have casinos here?
Oh, I think it's a great idea, actually. You know, I'm not a casino goer myself, but I have been to them, and I think they're wonderful. I think as long as you can control yourself, which some people can and some can't, I think it's all a personal choice.
Mm. But you have concerns about crime?
Yeah, only because of what I've been seeing here, and I've only been here 10 months. But what I've been seeing in the last 10 months has been a decline in you know, the police's ability to handle the crime.
Okay. Well, Brian, thank you for your call.
Sure.
I want an email from JB who says he was interested in hearing more from Professor Edington about gambling addiction mitigation measures. How do you address that 1% of people who he says have a problem? Professor Edington, what do you do?
Well, one of the obvious strategies that is being undertaken by casinos in many parts of the world is to use a very aggressive self-banning or involuntary exclusion policy. And in effect, what that implies is that an individual who has trouble controlling his or herself within the casino environment can self-exclude, can ask to not be admitted. And some casino companies have taken the position one step further by excluding customers who they feel are gambling inappropriately. And this obviously gets into some judgment questions on what that means. Given Singapore's reputation for control, I think this is a direction that they will go. And indeed, I expect in the bidding process, the government of Singapore is probably going to ask the bidding companies what kind of policies and procedures they would use to mitigate this issue. Whether you can do that in Hong Kong or not, I don't know. It really depends on how many casinos you have, what kind of market structure you end up with, and just how much of a free market approach you take.
Do you find many people self-exclude themselves, bar themselves from casinos?
It is not a terribly successful strategy. A lot of people do, and then they try to sneak back in.
Yeah.
So it's a funny relationship, a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde kind of situation with many people.
Bill, can I just add something here? In Singapore, the self-exclusion policy or clause has actually been extended slightly here in Singapore. In addition to self-exclusion, we are also open to excluding other members of the family. And this is something that was fairly new and was introduced also during this request for concept stage, where members of the family could exclude, people could exclude members of their own family from entering casinos. I'm not sure if this is new around the world, but it was placed as one of the conditions of this for this integrated resort.
I don't understand how that would work.
Well, I would, for instance, you know, if I had a my spouse would is a problem gambler and refuses to see it, I could actually submit her name to exclude her from entering the casino.
Hmm. That's a novel thought. Well, lots to chew on. Thank you very much indeed, Christopher Koo. On the line from Singapore, he's Managing Director of Master Consult Services Limited there. And thank you very much to Bill Edington, Professor at the University of Nevada in Reno. He's Director of the Institute for the Study of Gambling and Commercial Gaming there. Thanks very much to Howard Young, Legislative Councillor for the Tourism Functional Constituency we were talking to earlier, and to David Webb, who's Editor of Website, that's with 2bs.com. Thank you all very much indeed for joining us today. That's it from us. Me, Hugh Chiverton.
And me, Sarah Passmore. Thanks to our producer, Belinda Winterbourne.